You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Conservatorships have been catapulted into the national spotlight after Britney Spears' public battle to control her own finances, medical decisions, and personal life. But it also revealed to many a little-known or understood legal process impacting over 1 million Americans and thousands of Californians every year. An investigative journalist decided to dig deeper into this issue, and over the span of 2 years, zeroed in on the California Department of Developmental Services, or DDS, and their role in limited conservatorships over some of the most vulnerable Californians, adults with developmental disabilities. Joining us now is Andy Judson, investigative reporter for ABC 10 in Sacramento, to share her latest docuseries, The Price of Care, Taken by the State. She's also joined by Thomas Coleman, the legal director of the Spectrum Institute, a nonprofit dedicated to conservatorship reform. Andy and Thomas, welcome to Insight. Good morning.
Good morning, Vicky. Thank you for having us.
Well, Andy, starting with you, we had you on Insight last year to discuss conservatorships, and you looked into the systemic issues and what's being done or not being done to regulate a powerful industry in California. Just remind us, what is the intention of a conservatorship?
Yeah, the overall intention of a conservatorship is to take someone, probably a more vulnerable person, often the elderly or someone with a disability, and take away their rights and give them to another person who can take care of them, in short.
Yeah. Last year, you focused largely on the elderly and also the potential for emotional and financial abuse under some conservatorships. But now you're really honing in on adults with developmental disabilities. What led you down this path?
Yeah, I think, you know, we all know we learned about conservatorships because of Britney Spears. What I think a lot of people don't understand is that there's different types of conservatorships in California. There's three main ones. There's general, which is what we focused on for the elderly. There's an LPS conservatorship, which is for mentally unwell patients, where 5150 holds usually spark that type of conservatorship. And then there's limited, which is the ones we're focusing on in this investigation, which is for those with disabilities. And I think it's important to note that most people under limited conservatorships are placed under them at age 18. So it's a conservatorship really for their entire life. So digging into this different type of conservatorship, we heard feedback from our initial investigation. It's like, hey, great job. You didn't cover this other kind. So we're like, all right, here we go. Let's try it out.
Why is it called limited conservatorship? What makes it limited?
Yeah, there's seven specific powers that it's supposed to be limited because it doesn't strip someone completely of all of their rights like general conservatorship. So these seven powers include, you know, medical decisions. One is marriage. One is who, you know, you have social contacts with. So it's supposed to, you know, specify what someone is able and able not to make decisions on. And they'll take that right from them and give it to, you know, a parent or someone else who then, you know, is in a better position to make those specific decisions for that person.
How many people are we talking about in California that are under a limited conservatorship?
Yeah, Tom might be able to answer that one a little bit better, but it is, you know, thousands and thousands of people under these types of conservatorships.
Yeah, Tom, I'll bring you in. How many people are under a limited conservatorship in California?
Well, no one really knows for sure, but according to the records of the Department of Developmental Services, they're admitting to 57,000 adults with developmental disabilities being under a conservatorship. So that's a good starting point. But the courts themselves, they're supposed to be doing the protecting, and the judicial branch of government doesn't have a clue as to how many people they're protecting. That's how little they care about this issue.
Given that this falls under a state agency, Tom, why isn't there better tracking for this?
Well, basically, except when the Department of Developmental Services is where the director is appointed to be a conservator of an individual, which only has occurred in about 450 cases approximately, the other 56,000 people, the department just washes its hands of it. It does not have any program for monitoring the regional centers. The regional centers play a role in all of these cases. They're supposed to do an assessment of the individual's capacities and inabilities and so on. It's an unfunded legislative mandate. There's nothing in their budget. There's nothing in their contracts. There's no training. There's no monitoring. So basically, DDS doesn't want to get involved, and they've been doing a really good job of not being involved. But as a result, it's just a free-for-all that every regional center does what it wants, every judge does what he or she wants, and there's just no rhyme or reason. When I look at this particular case of Garth Shute, that was the first episode, and when I heard the court-appointed attorney saying, well, I didn't know that he wanted to stay with his mother and be at home, I just almost fell off my chair. I mean, what type of an attorney is not going to listen to the client? And in that program, it showed that he told the judge, he told ABC 10, he told the police, he told on five separate occasions, and yet his court-appointed attorney did not advocate for his rights. So that is a huge problem with the system.
Well, let's actually get into that, because the first episode, it focuses on the Shute family in Sacramento. And as Tom was mentioning, the family member is named Garth. He's 40 years old. He has a developmental disability. He needs a caretaker. How did you find this family?
Yeah, actually, this is our, as you mentioned, second season of digging into conservatorships. And they actually watched the first season about general conservatorships, and they didn't know that we had actually started to look into limited conservatorships. So they reached out to us, and it was just really good timing. And we just dug in and went from there.
What did you learn from the Shute family when learning about this other type of conservatorship in the state?
Yeah, you know, I think I'll start off with what stood out to me maybe more, because when we sat down for the interview, I think when Jill, the mother, was talking, I was thinking, you know, this really can't be real. This doesn't happen in the United States. But I think because we've been covering conservatorships for so long, we knew, you know, the court documents to look at. We knew who to talk to, and it is happening. So I think that that's what really stood out. And we learned that this is happening here. You know, people who are saying, this is what I want, are not being listened to.
Hmm. I mean, they had little to no contact or knowledge about Garth's whereabouts. You also tried to reach out to Garth as well, and initially to no avail, but you were able to connect with him. How were you able to make that happen?
Yeah, you know, we did try to go through his service coordinator for the regional center, who is acting as his conservator because he is conserved by DDS. They would not allow us to have an interview with Garth. They said that he has not expressed any interest in talking with us. I do want to specify, we then said, you know, was he explained to that, you know, a reporter wants to talk with him, and we never got a response. So, you know, I think for us, it was really important to ensure we reported exactly what Garth wants. So that's why we went to another level of trying to make sure we had contact with him. And his eldest brother, Russell, at that point is still allowed visitation. And so he hadn't seen Garth for about 6 months and was granted visitation at a local park. And him and his wife and their kids met with Garth. And so we, you know, viewed it from afar to just see what their interactions were. And about halfway through their visit, I had the opportunity to go up and talk with him.
Well, let's listen to a part of that conversation.
Do you miss your family?
Yes. My brother. What can I do?
Do you wish you lived with your family, Garth?
Yes. I terribly miss my mom.
Listen. Where would you like to live?
Where do you want to live, Garth?
With my family.
Yeah, with who specifically?
Mom.
And Andy, this wasn't the only time Garth had expressed wanting to live with his family. There was another incident when law enforcement responded to the home. Can you explain what happened there?
Yeah, so law enforcement, the sheriff's department, was called and did a welfare check on the family. If you watch the investigation, we explain exactly up to this point why this happened. But anyways, the deputies were there, and Ian, the elder, one of the brothers, filmed the entirety of their check there, which was about 47 minutes. And during it, you know, they took Garth outside and asked him directly, you know, where do you want to live? He again, as you heard, said clear as day, I want to live with my mom. I want to live with my family. And that was reiterated throughout their visit there.
Yeah. And I mean, he's currently at a state funded care facility. This is a 2-year investigation, but just last month there was a court hearing for Garth about his conservatorship, and he spoke directly to the judge after his mother noticed that her son's hand was raised. So we're going to take a quick listen to what Garth said to the judge.
Garth has patiently been holding his hand up for almost 5 minutes, so hopefully we can address that.
Until this point, Garth has rarely had a voice in court.
You know this girl that tried to take my Woody and my Jesse?
Hey, Garth, what I want you to do is I want you to talk to Mr. Harpainter about your concerns, okay? And what you want to do.
So I want to live with my mom.
I'm sorry, I can't.
I'm saying I want to live with my mom.
And who is Mr. Harpainter?
Yeah, Mr. Harpainter is Garth's court-appointed attorney. So the court has appointed Harpainter as Garth's representative to uphold what Garth wants and, you know, represent that in a court of law.
Hmm. What has DDS said about this? I mean, this is a 2-year investigation.
That's a great question. We've been asking DDS, the Department of Developmental Services, for an on-camera interview throughout this for about 8 months now, and they've refused every time. And even before we aired, we did something I've actually never done in an investigation before. We sent them a 3-page single-space letter outlining our investigation's findings and asking them 15 very specific questions of findings that we had found. And we did this because we wanted to make sure they understood what was coming out in our investigation and had, you know, a fair opportunity to respond and give their side. And they did respond, but it was with a pretty generic written statement, and it didn't answer any of our questions.
And the Department of Developmental Services actually released an update, what, a day or two before the first episode of your investigation aired?
Mm-hmm, yeah, 2 days right before our investigation aired, they released a press release with new actions saying they're going to be taking these actions to supposedly support those that are conserved under them. So we obviously thought the timing of this was really interesting. Some of those actions are forming a panel of national subject experts to complete a review. But none of these actions had specific details on, you know, budget or when these things will happen. So we requested an interview again with DDS, you know, a day before our investigation aired because we wanted to ask them about this. And they again declined.
What is the status of Garth's situation? Where does it stand now?
Yeah, I mean, they have another hearing in December. And before then, the family, the judge ordered the family and DDS to meet and hopefully come to a resolution. Unfortunately, I don't have an update on that yet, but hopefully they can find that resolution.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're talking with investigative reporter Andy Judson about her documentary series on conservatorships in California. Thomas, I want to bring you in. Tell us more about the Spectrum Institute and how it helps adults with mental or developmental disabilities.
Well, Spectrum Institute has been studying the conservatorship system in California for 10 years. And we just dug deeper and deeper and deeper. And it's a very complex system because it's decentralized. There's no one in charge of the system. So each county does its own thing. Each regional center does its own thing. So what we do is we try to bring to light the flaws in the system, which are many. Every moving part of the system is broken and in need of repair. And then we try to identify the solutions. What can be done to improve the situation for these tens of thousands of adults, and especially those who are not yet conserved? Every year there are 5,000 or more new petitions filed, and this is where the people need to have vigorous defense services. So we've offered legal training for public defenders and other defense attorneys, but they're not getting it. This example here in this case, this attorney should have been zealously advocating for his client's wishes. And as soon as this came up at the last hearing, the attorney should have done something immediately to file a motion to get him back with his family, not waiting till December, but arguing, you know, let's get some unmonitored visitation with the family members first, and then I'm going to be bringing motions to change this whole dynamic so he's back at home. So the Superior Court should be ashamed of the way it's operating its court-appointed attorney program. And I am surprised that the State Bar of California has not received a complaint against this attorney to investigate his performance in this case, because this is really where the pressure needs to be made. Also, the buck stops at the top with the governor and with the secretary of the Health and Human Services Agency and with the director of the Department of DDS. There needs to be more funding, and there needs to be performance standards and monitoring, not just of the 400 and some people that are under DDS, but all 57,000 of them and the way that the system is operating. So right now it's a free for all. And I think that people need to look to the governor, to the budget, to the, as they say, the Secretary of the Health and Human Services, the Mark Gahaly, and also Nancy Bargmann. So this is where the pressure points are for reform. The executive branch needs to improve.
How does California compare to adult guardianship in other states?
It's about the same. It's a mess everywhere. Some states have done better. Nevada is more of a model now, because it had scandals and so on, but the judicial branch and the legislature got involved, passed laws, changed everything. And now people get a court-appointed attorney who's not a part of the system, but there's a nonprofit that advocates, and they have been successful in getting about 25% of the petitions dismissed. And those who have been stuck in guardianships, sometimes for years, they've been successful in getting 25% of them liberated. In California, once you're in, it's like quicksand. You almost never get out. So I would look to Nevada, the Nevada model for reform here in California.
Is there anything that California does right when it comes to conservatorships? I know that there are multiple types in the state.
Well, actually, not really, except recently the legislature has finally, what it's doing right is it's finally starting to pass some laws. So it passed the one requiring the attorneys to give zealous advocacy. But we see that doesn't always work, because look in this case, but at least now that's a legal requirement to advocate for the wishes of the person, not what somebody else thinks is in their best interest, but what they want. There's a law pending now that's going to pass this year, that's going to require that less restrictive alternatives be seriously considered. And they're going to pour about $10 million in funding so that every single court has a self-help center to help families and these individuals find alternatives so they don't get stuck in the system to begin with. Then there's another bill that's probably going to pass this year. And for those who do get placed into conservatorship, it's going to require a very detailed continuing care plan about what must be done to protect this person's rights for visitation and health and everything. So what's the good news is the legislature is finally starting to pay attention. The bad news is the executive branch still is in denial, the governor and these agency heads, the secretaries. So, and the judiciary just doesn't want to talk about it at all, because they're so used to just the railroad runs on time and the railroad always goes in one destination and makes it there. And efficiency is really what they're looking at. So the Chief Justice is leaving. We'll have a new Chief Justice next year. So maybe things will change in the judicial branch with a new Chief Justice.
As Andy mentioned, DDS announced immediate steps toward system improvements a day or two before her docuseries began airing. What did DDS, the Department of Developmental Services, get right with these changes?
Well, the fact that they're bringing in some outside people to look at it, and that they're going to have some more transparency, and that they want to have some, let's say, close look at some of the individual cases, not just the how the system is operating. So all of that is good. I'm pleased to see it happening. I guess better late than never. But I mean, a group of us met with them, their lawyers and others in their department in 2016. We told them this day was coming. This day of reckoning was coming. We warned them. We pleaded with them to do something. 6 years later, now only because all the dirty linen was going to be exposed by Andy Judson's wonderful reporting, they finally decided to do something. So better late than never. And the proof will be in what they really do. Another good thing that's happening is that some grand juries are finally starting to investigate and make reports. So the Alameda County Grand Jury did a months-long report about what was happening there. It kind of, it really pointed to many flaws in the system and made recommendations. So other grand juries I know are investigating this in other counties too. So really the good news is that more people are paying attention at all levels.
And Vicki, I think I also just wanted to add one more thing on to what Tom was talking about with DDS's new reforms that they're supposedly taking. I think it's important to note that the California State Auditor's Office has been conducting audits of DDS for the last decade. And their most recent audit came out in June, just a couple of months ago, and it just had some really concerning findings about DDS. But what really stood out to me is that many things the auditor's office named weren't actually new. They've told DDS these things that are broken in the past audits, and they even called it shocking that DDS hasn't fixed these things that the auditors told them were broken. So I'm saying that because I really hope these new incentives DDS just released about their own conservatorship program are actually going to happen. But I think we can see from the auditor's reports, DDS has said they'll fix things years ago, and that has not happened. So my question is, why can we trust DDS now?
You know, and Andy, this is the first episode of a five-part series, and we were talking about the Garth and the Schutte family. What can viewers expect in the upcoming episodes?
Yeah, obviously in the first episode, we dig into how DDS can be the conservator of a person themselves. But if you thought that that was wild, buckle your seatbelt, because we really dig into DDS failing people with disabilities as a whole across California, which is their job. We dig into that California auditor's report, and we dig into the money and a lot of conflicts of interest that we found.
Yeah, how is this funded?
It's funded through our own taxpayer dollars. They have a $12 billion budget, and it's paid for through taxpayers right here in California.
What do you want people to take away from this series? Because this is often a situation that you don't really understand until you're in the thick of it with a family member or a loved one.
That's a great question. I think a lot of the people I've talked to say they didn't know that this could happen. They didn't know this could happen to them. If you watch the first episode, Jill has an extensive background in helping people with disabilities. So, and her three sons work for the state in other departments. So I think if it could happen to them, it really can happen to anyone. So to be aware that, you know, this is not only happening, it can happen to you, but it's also funded by our own taxpayer dollars is important for people to know.
Andy Judson is an investigative reporter for ABC 10. Thank you, Andy.
Thanks for having me.
And Thomas Coleman is a legal director of the Spectrum Institute, a nonprofit organization dedicated to human rights and focused on conservatorship reform. Thanks, Tom, for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Andy's five-part docuseries, The Price of Care, Taken by the State, looks at the state agency responsible for conservatorships of adults with developmental disabilities. Each episode will air Thursday evening through the month of September. We have a link on our Insight page. Still ahead, the World Butchers Challenge is coming to Sacramento. We'll learn how Team USA hopes to carve up the competition. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.